Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Hallway Wrestling Podcast, a special episode of the Hallway Wrestling Podcast. After last week's interview with Louis Dangor, I'm delighted to be joined. I'm the manager, and I forgot Rain, obviously, and I'm delighted to be joined this week by US sports editor and presenter at TalkSport and Dominic Mysterio lookalike, if you will. Alex McCarthy, how are you?
I was all right. I was getting a great intro till you hit me with the Dominic Mysterio line. Do you know what?
Quizomania fan, of course.
Yeah, well, there you go. I actually put up a video today of the hotel I'm in, and somebody had the gall to say I look like James Ellsworth. That has got to be the lowest of the lows. I did not appreciate that at all. So, in fact, I'll take Dominic Mysterio over that.
Yeah. You have a nice chin. where that's the big giveaway that you don't look like James Ellsworth.
Yeah.
But you are reporting live from MK Don Stadium. Anything interesting going on there?
Not really, mate. MK Don's in Ipswich. So literally, for anyone who hasn't seen, my hotel room looks out on the stadium, on the pitch at MK Don's. And they're playing Ipswich today. And it's 1-1, but not the most interesting affair. So,
And you will be listening to this 3 weeks in advance. So don't go looking for the match when we're talking about.
You won't anyway. But yeah,
no, you won't. You are before we get on to a bit of wrestling. You are, of course, as I've learned, you are a Newcastle fan. How do you feel your season is? Minus the Saudis, you didn't get the Man City treatment. How do you feel your season's going to go? You seem to be blowing hot and cold so far.
Yeah, I mean, for me with Newcastle, right, like, so even all through the takeover talk, which went on forever, I still never really thought to myself, like, I never got my hopes up because it's just what Newcastle do. Like, it never happens. And Mike Ashley, you know, he keeps making all the right noises but never really follows through. But what I will say for him is this summer he did actually put his hand in his pocket a little bit. And I'm really happy with the signings that we got. I think Jeff Hendrick is a smart bit of business for nothing. Callum Wilson is the kind of, when you look at, we spent 40 million on Jolinton and then we spent I think 20 on Callum Wilson, you know, and he's, for me, he's proven Premier League pedigree, and I like it when we get in British players and not, you know, just these foreign sort of speculative signings. Yeah, like, I mean because you've got to remember, Newcastle have never, like, before the £40 million deal, we hadn't broken our transfer record in like 15 years, so for us to then spend money on someone who clearly was just a gamble is just, yeah, silly. So I'm very happy. Ryan Fraser, Jamal Lewis, all very good signings. I think we're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, there was a popular theory that he was doing these signings to kind of get a break the top 10, and then the offer might come in for buying the club. But that's if you're playing devil's advocate, but you have to kind of play that with Mike Ashley all the time. Starting off, in my research, I found out from other interviews that you work for a company called Give Me Sport, which is where you got your start. And how was that? How did that come about? And how did it set you up for the future? And kind of talk a bit about that for start.
So Give Me Sport was kind of a weird one. Like, I graduated from university and I kind of mucked around. I didn't really get the work experience, so I found it very hard to break in. So I had to, 4 years after that, I had to go back to college and get an NCTJ, which, for anyone listening who doesn't know what that is, that's essentially a qualification to work for a newspaper. You know, you learn the law of being a journalist and all of these kind of things. And so I had to go back and get that, and then I got work experience with that. And then I was ready for jobs. All of a sudden, I found it much easier to get interviews. And I actually got one with Give Me Sport. And I didn't get it, which was upsetting at the time. And I remember after the interview, the guy said, look, if you want to do some freelance work for us, that would be fine. And I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to turn my nose up at it. Obviously, it's money. So I said yes. And then I think about 6 months after that, they secured the NBA partnership. So they became like the NBA's official UK outlet. And I just messaged them saying, look, like, are you looking for any staff writers to, you know, to help you with the NBA? And they said, actually, we are. I got put in a pool of like 10 freelancers. And they said, okay, we're going to make one of you our actual full-time staff writer, which just so happened to luckily be me at the end of the day. So it was kind of really an uphill battle just to get there. Mm. And when I got there, the guy that didn't hire me had left, but he would return like 2 years later. And I always kind of loved to remind him, like, yeah, do you remember when you didn't give me a job? And, you know,
biggest mistake of your life.
Well, to be fair, he's proud of me now, so it's great. But back then it was funny, man. And so I kind of made my way in doing MBA stuff in the company. That was the first thing that I did. But I always said, I always made it clear that if there was WWE to be written, and I knew we did write about it on the website, that I would be very happy to do that. Just wanted to let them know that I had more strings to my bow. But the first few months were just kind of, I mean, the NBA doesn't really do great traffic, to be frank. And as much as I love it, it was kind of like unfulfilling, no one really reading your work. But then I kind of graduated to, you know, they saw that I was a decent writer overall, so they let me do other things. And the more I got into WWE and the more numbers they saw, it was like, wow, maybe we should just let Alex handle this. So I became the US editor, and then eventually I just became solely the WWE lead. And that was like going to cover SummerSlams, WrestleManias. That was where I started building up this portfolio of interviews that I've done. Mm. And making the connections that I've got today. So it definitely started with Gimme Sport. Without them, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. It was a great place to learn. I recommend it to anyone who is looking to get into the journalist game, because they have an academy there that you can sign up to, and then they will pay you to do shifts and you kind of learn as you go. And as long as you've got something about you and an interest or a study in writing, they'll give you a chance. So it was a great learning ground for me, and that is essentially where I made my name as a WWE guy, because then TalkSport, after seeing me cover it at one WrestleMania, basically made me an offer and said, how would you like to come and do that for us? They didn't even have that job before. Yeah. I went there. It's the same as Gimme Sport. There was no WWE lead. They just made it because I was good at it. And it's the same as TalkSport. They just said, look, we there's a lot of WWE and wrestling audience out there. We'd like to get a piece of that. How would you feel about coming to do it for us? So even though I was a bit hesitant, because I thought, oh man, I don't know, like it's a very cool opportunity. And being the US editor of TalkSport, of course, like this weekend I'm away doing boxing, and some weekends it's UFC. But like my passion, and I think everyone can tell that by my Twitter, is certainly WWE. So yeah, TalkSport have taken it up a level, but Give Me Sport is certainly where it started.
Yeah, like I'm starting my journalism degree here in Ireland on Monday, so that's actually quite interesting that you say that. Obviously you mentioned TalkSport. For those who don't know TalkSport, where have you been? It's one of the biggest outlets in the world in terms of sport now. You probably would have seen it mostly through the Facebook and the Twitter clips of people phoning into the football show, getting irrationally angry after football matches. That's one of my, every time you see the thumbnail of someone in the studio and someone getting angry, it's always an entertaining listen. But what that doesn't show is that you have done an amazing job with the wrestling and the fight section of that. I mean, you're away on the Matchroom boxing event this week, and you just had an interview out with Kyle O'Reilly, who listeners will know is my favorite wrestler in the world from the work he's done in the last year. And I cannot wait for this Sunday with Finn Balor. But how did TalkSport come about, and what have been some of the great moments that you've had there?
So, yeah, like I say, I mean, I didn't even really know much about TalkSport's website. You know, I obviously knew that the radio station was their bread and butter and what they're known for. But when the website approached me and said, look, we'd like to get you on board and do all this stuff, I was just like, okay. You know, I took a meeting with them. And the fact that I had done UFC and boxing and stuff for Give Me Sport, like, I always handled fight nights for Give Me Sport anyway. And the fact that I'd done that was appealing to them. They were like, you know, we obviously want to grow that too. And yeah, how about you just actually be the US editor? And I was like, well, yeah, that sounds great. Because the thing with wrestling, as much as I adore it, if you pigeonhole yourself that way, there's not many places to go, right? Mm-hmm. Like in the country right now.
It's niche.
I've said to you already in this chat, I didn't have that job didn't exist at Gimme Sport until I had it. The job at TalkSport didn't exist until I had it. Like, it's very hard to explain, but like, there's not many websites that just have somewhat, you know, a fully well paid at that. Somebody who just handles WWE, you have to kind of be versatile and do other things and bring other things to the table, because not many websites are going to prioritize WWE that way. And I know that is slowly changing. And I'd like to think some of the work I've done has certainly helped with that, certainly in TalkSport.
Yeah.
But there's been, in my career, it's been an uphill struggle without a doubt. So getting into TalkSport, it was when I got there, and I've said this story a few times, but like, they'd only done, I think, 20 or 30,000 clicks the year prior. And then we had 14 million clicks my first year there. So like, the growth was just insane and they couldn't ignore it. And I'd been saying about halfway, because it was on like 7 million, whatever it was. And I'd said to the main boss of TalkSport, who is impossible to get a meeting with, by the way, but I kind of just...
Like Vinny Mac himself.
Yeah, I just literally hounded him down until he couldn't ignore me. And I just said, look, the audience is clearly here. TalkSport is kind of becoming known with wrestling in the UK now because of our work. So we should have a show. And they were like, at first they were a bit like, I don't know. And it took about 6 months to become to reality. And then, in typical fashion, when it did, it was really fast. And comes out of nowhere almost. But I'm super glad that it did. Without a doubt, that milestone is incredible, because 20 years, I think it was off air, the wrestling show that TalkSport originally had. Mm. And for me to feel like the work that I directly did led to that show returning, because I'm a one-man band at TalkSport. I don't, even before Zoom, I had to film all my interviews and I had, do all the recordings and do everything on my own. And so it's quite fulfilling to see something that you have built yourself kind of rise and become something. I didn't expect it to be as quick, to be honest, but I'm so grateful and happy that it has.
Yeah, you haven't had time to smell the roses because you've just been go, go, go. You talk about you're on business in MK with the Matrium Boxing. A little bit of a sidetrack. I don't know if you were you covering the event where Zelfa Barrett fought Ireland, the Irish fighter Eric Donovan? That was a very, very interesting fight that a few of the lads in the chat brought up when I said I was interviewing you.
Oh, no, I wasn't there for that one. So this is the first one that I've actually come into, because the thing with boxing in TalkSport, so I went to fight camp, but I didn't like go to the bubble, if that makes sense. I went for like a day, and then that was before they actually had the first show. And then the thing is, because TalkSport have their own show called Fight Night with like Gareth Davis and people like that.
Oh yeah.
Typically they'll handle the boxing as like I would the WWE. But it just so happened this card, we didn't have anyone available, and they were like, "How do you want to do it?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do."
Oh, okay, I understand that. Onto like what my favorite content coming from your channels is the interviews that you do with all the wrestlers. You and Louis are like when I'm trying to get into the interview game, it's something you two are two of them the people that I look at and kind of take bits and pieces to try and mold into my own stuff. But it's a very broad question. I asked Louis this and he was like, "Well, that's very broad." It's what makes a good interview?
Well, Louis's not wrong, but at the same time, what's quite fascinating about what you just said, like, Louis is pretty new to the game, man. So for him to have established himself like he has so quickly, I feel like is a testament to the good work that he has done. 100%. And
yourself as well. It's fantastic.
Well, sure, but I mean, I think my first, I actually had a post about this not long ago. My first WWE interview was just over four years ago with the Big Show. And for Louis, by contrast even, he's probably like a year or so into it, really. So I'm definitely impressed with how far he's come and what he's done. And I'm always rooting for other people in the UK to kind of come along and help that space, because having peers is great. It makes everyone better. I'm not the kind of person that subscribes to, I don't know, putting other people down to raise your own stock or anything like that. Feel like it's better for UK wrestling and the UK as a whole if we have more people doing it well and being successful, and that goes for like Gary Cassidy, Steph Chase, there's a whole catalog of people that I think will break out in the near future. But Louis is certainly one of the most recent. What makes a good interview, man? I think a lot of people kind of say when they watch mine that I it looks like I have a good rapport with who I'm interviewing. Like generally speaking, it's very relaxed and kind of conversational almost. And I know that's easier said than done. A lot of people will say that to you, like, you know, just make it like a conversation. But I definitely have some.
Yeah, sometimes there's different characters and you kind of have to adjust to different people.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you do. And it's like, you know, being able to read a tone as well and like read the room per se. Not a lot of people kind of have that skill. Early on in my interviewing career, I'd go into it thinking like, this is what I want, this is what I need to ask. And it was like, no matter what, that's what was going to happen. Do you know what I mean? And as I've got older, I've realized that kind of either, you know, you need to be flexible with the order in what you ask things and maybe like, calculated in how you broach a topic, and mm-hmm. you make it not seem as daunting or as, you know, clinical as it might do otherwise. So a lot of it just is in your personality. If you are a welcoming, warm kind of person, that will shine through. And I think for me now as well, like obviously a lot of the superstars I've got to know at this point. So mm-hmm. if we're going to talk, it'll be like, oh, you know, last time we spoke about this, and there's a certain comfort level with that, them knowing that, you know, knowing your work and having dealt with you before, that does help. Mm. But I think most of it, for me, a good interviewer breaks down into the interviewer themselves and how they, you know, how you project your personality. You don't want to be overbearing, but you want to be welcoming and warm. And it really is the questions, right? Like, if you don't have good questions, it doesn't matter if you're the nicest person in the world or if they like you the most. It doesn't matter. You need to have good questions. Yeah. So, I think one thing that I've always, my interview work has kind of been the backbone of a lot of what I've done, because I ask the right questions mostly. Like I ask the kind of things as a hardcore wrestling fan like I am that I'd want to know. You know,
exactly,
I want a match and I want to know who put it together. I want to know what was said backstage about it. I want to know it, all the ins and outs that people find so interesting. But a lot of people kind of miss those points when they do interview. So I feel like that also garners a lot of respect and a relationship in an interview too, because they know what you're talking about. They know that you're invested in what they've been doing, or, you know what I mean? I think all of that is very important. Louis was right. This is broad as hell, but yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. And I think everyone gets better with time. That repetition in anything is vital.
Exactly. Yeah. This is probably a question for like early Alex, but is there any interview where before you press the call button, and before you got onto the call, that you were like daunted, or that felt daunting, or you were scared about, or do you still get nervous when you talk to people today? I'm assuming you don't, but was there any big personalities that were like, oh, this is nerve wracking?
Yeah, I mean, do you know what? When I get nervous about things, it's not necessarily who I'm going to talk to. It's that I just want it to be good.
Yeah.
So I'm more nervous about how the interview will go, rather than who I'm talking to. And I think, you know, like when I had the 25 minute sit down with Triple H in Cardiff, which I kind of made my career in a lot of eyes, opened a lot of eyes to it, I should say. And before that I was nervous. I was like, not a lot of people get this amount of time with him. I need to maximize, I need to make sure I ask the right questions. And luckily, you know, I did. I had a lot, you know, people like Sam Roberts and Drew McIntyre got DM'd me after saying that was how great it was. And that was so fulfilling to hear. But, you know, that's kind of what you strive for every time, I guess. It doesn't matter who it is, right? So
yeah,
even whatever interview I do, I come away and, you know, and I approach it with certain goals and certain things that I want to get from it. And it doesn't always work out that way, you know, but I guess if you always lead your best foot forward, then it doesn't matter. In terms of nerves, I think I had Chris Jericho before the last AEW pay-per-view, and it was the first time I had him like long form. I've had him for like 5-10 minutes before, but this was like 25-30. Jericho is someone who, he's great, but like if you ask him the wrong kind of questions, he'll you know, he won't hesitate to tell you or to go that way. So you kind of think, right, you know, I need to make this. And you got to remember as well, he was doing like a media tour almost. He'd spoken to so many people. So there's that as well, where you think, I don't want to do too much overlapping, or, you know,
stand
also
out,
at the same time, like, you don't want to grab the lines everyone else has got. So it's always tough in that regard. I think that's one of the main things, really. Like, I worry about what I'm going to ask him and what I'm going to get from it. Cause there's so many times where you'll get, you know, you got like all these inside scoopsters these days in wrestling, right? Yeah. All these people that claim to have sources and stuff. And some of them do. But I mean, in an interview, you can pull out so much if you just ask the right questions. And that is as effective, if not more, because it's from the horse's mouth, than sources say. So yeah. I always kind of really take a lot of pride in the interview work.
Yeah. Is there anybody, in the best way possible, is there anybody who you were like surprised by, who you're like, you came away being like, oh, I thought I had a perception of this guy and he's actually a lot nicer or a lot more different attitude, or per se, for want of a better term? Is there anybody you were surprised by?
I don't know, because they're always kind of, it's in their interest to be on their best behavior, right? Like, they don't, it's not really for them to be, it won't serve them or WWE for them to be that way. So I think they're always generally on their best behavior. But there's definitely a few like heels that I've spoken to, and you meet them and they are so nice, like unbelievably nice. Like Ginny is one in NXT UK. She's like Rhea Ripley. I remember I met her for the first time just after like the Tegan Nox knee thing. It was a few months after that. And she was like the monster heel in NXT UK. And she was like the nicest person in the world. So you get a lot of that where they surprise you. In terms of like, I don't think I've ever interviewed anyone and they've had like a bad attitude. And I've thought, you know, in wrestling, it's less like, for instance, I spoke to Derek Chisora yesterday for the first time, and he's like a volatile character. And I thought to myself, God, you worry about what to ask him. But then as you get going, you think, oh, actually, like, he was cool yesterday. Same
ask
with like
ask him about his laxative pills or whatever he was.
Well, I mean, this is it as well. Like, Dillian White is another one who I used to write his column for TalkSport. And so I kind of got to know him, but having been around him, I had lunch with him and, you know, been to his fights and whatever, like spoke to him on the phone weekly at one point. I know as well that like, if he's in a bad mood, he's not someone you want to be in the way of. So like there's a lot of people like that. And, but I feel like in terms of wrestling interviews, everyone's been nothing but nice to me thus far. I mean, I guess I'm lucky in that regard.
Yeah, well, that's a testament to you as well. Because if you're a nice person, people are being nice to you. It reflects on the interview. I put some questions to friends on Twitter, and I got an interesting one here from Rory, one of my good friends. Lack of proper chanting in US sports is title. And he was like, every time the UK fans go over to WrestleMania weekend, the audience seems more engaged. To me, it's not just a bigger event that they travel for, but it's also like different sporting cultures. Do you have any comment on that as someone who you're probably the perfect person to talk about, because you're a US representative and you are from the UK, so you've seen both sides quite in depth, and I was wondering what the comparisons were.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, like the WWE WWE as a PR and as a company and the superstars, they all love like the English fans. That's pretty much their favorite, because it's going to be a raucous show. It's going to be a loud show. And, you know, in the Attitude Era, if you ever watch on the network, the shows were kind of always that way, like loud anyway. And I guess we've just moved away from that with the demographic, because it's more younger. I guess it's more families that go to the show as opposed to, I don't know, guys in their 20s drinking. So I think, for me, it's like a culture of English fans. Like, obviously, if you go to a football game, it's chanting pretty much the whole way, unless it's Arsenal. And then you're like, I just feel that it's not that US fans don't chant or anything, but it is different. And when you go to those, like, Raw after WrestleMania shows, they're some of the best shows I've ever been to, just for atmosphere-wise. And it is chock full of Europeans who have obviously got the packages for the WrestleMania weekend. I don't know why there's such a difference, but I know that WWE do really value it, and they've played into it so much. I honestly think, when I say they've played into it, I mean, like, they have the two UK tours a year, and they obviously highly promote kind of the Raw after WrestleMania, where they know that they're going to be some crazy fans. But I do honestly believe, and was told, that WWE had plans to have a UK pay-per-view this year before the pandemic really put things on hold. Drew McIntyre has kind of alluded to as much without actually saying. So I do think that they're taking the UK market a lot seriously. And the vast majority of that is down to the fans.
Yeah. Speaking of Drew and UK pay-per-view, Drew in the main event of a UK pay-per-view, who would you put him up against?
So do you know what? The terrible answer here is, like, Tyson Fury, which they're clearly angling towards.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of hunger to see that. No. Great for Drew in a way, like, if for that exposure, because, you know, it would be a mainstream thing here. In the UK, it would be massive. Like, everyone would cover it. So I understand, from a WWE perspective, why they would do that.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, Drew, Big E. I don't know, because Big E's quite that mainstream appeal. He's probably going to go over Sheamus next week. If I was to pick one out of the air, Drew against Big E would be big. There's a lot more better options than Tyson Fury.
Yeah, I'm just saying, from a WWE perspective, I get it. I mean, it's not what I want. I think after watching Tyson Fury with Braun Strowman, all right, Braun Strowman's not walking him through it like Adam Cole would have walked through Pat McAfee, right? Mm. But by the same token, Tyson Fury just didn't move well in a WWE ring. It just didn't look visually great.
The no-sell was a bit awkward as well.
The what?
The no-sell at the end of that match.
Just all of it was a bit meh. I mean, for me, if you're doing that on a pay-per-view, then you've got to have Drew against the biggest draw you've got, hopefully. And that would be, like, to me, that's a Reigns. And they've spoken a little bit about having that kind of title versus title, or champ versus champ at the very least. Mm. It's hard to say. But I mean, if you're the champ, you want to put him against, you know, arguably the biggest draw, make it the biggest feeling match possible to sell it to the British public. But I feel like WWE think that's Tyson Fury, which kind of is a shame.
Yeah. Back to the interviews momentarily. I don't know if you've had many of these, but Louis had his dad come in the middle of an interview. Have you ever had any funny moments during interviews with where it be a wrestler? They're doing something or saying something. Have you ever had any moments that stuck in your mind?
I mean, I've had a few just recently. My kids love to do run-ins, right? I've got two daughters, two mm-hmm. and four, and so with Eddie Hearn as well. The other day, like literally about 2 weeks ago, the very start of the interview, my 2-year-old sprinted in. Like, she's too fast for my partner, And then, with Ilya Dragunov as well, she did the same. Like, the other one's older and understands a bit better, so I can kind of give her the signal, like, no, go away. but the 2-year-old, she just comes storming in. And, that's pretty much the main disruptor when it comes to my interviews.
Yeah. I have a question here that I put down. This isn't probably, like, best match. It's probably, it might be the same answer, but, like, if you were to, you had one of your friends who wasn't a wrestling fan, and they were like, you've got one match to get me into wrestling and get me on board, what match would you pick?
That's so hard, that question. Like, I think, so a lot, wrestling is so subjective, right? That what I like and what I find amazing about wrestling might be different to, like a New Japan diehard, or like an ECW nostalgic feel. Like, there's so many varieties of wrestling that for you to try and grab someone from the jump is hard, because a lot of what's amazing about wrestling is the story that's laid into it, right? So it's kind of hard to to pack that into one match and say, but I mean, Austin Bret Hart, Mania 13 is a given. Like, that's amazing. I think Rock Austin from WrestleMania 17, because the video package there will explain everything you need to know. And also, it's just the two biggest stars the business has ever seen. But conversely, I think as well, like the TLC match at WrestleMania 17 is so mental that, like, if you were watching it for the first time and you thought wrestling was fake, you'd be like, wow, this is mad. Like, you know, even though, like, okay, it's scripted, but damn, that's dangerous. Like, that might open people's eyes a little bit to it too. So it all depends. Like, you know, of course, you've got Kenny Omega and Okada. Dominion's probably my favorite, maybe, out of them. But there's a lot of different styles and things that can attract different people to wrestling. But I tend to think it's the grand spectacle and the you know, the amazing moments. You know, that's what they always talk about, right? Any wrestler will always tell you it's all about moments. And those, I think Rock Austin and the TLC 2, I think that is, they have a flavor of everything, which will kind of get you gripped.
Yeah. I've another fan question here. It's quite a loaded question. Quite similar vein to the last one. The likes of Zack Sabre Jr., Chad Gable, Suzuki, and like technical Japanese wrestlers, and only seem to be appreciated in the States by like diehard wrestling fans. Even on AEW, but then conversely on AEW, it seems like people lean towards the guys doing like high risk moves. And then like WWF and WCW, you throw in like technical guys, and JR was getting over their movesets, but now it feels like he struggles to get over the people in AEW because it's just a completely different moveset. Have you ever noticed that, or have you got any comments on why that may be, or why different styles are hard to get over for different people?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I spoke to Kid Gabriel only a couple of weeks ago. And of course, like, there's a lot of British talent that are super versed in that style. You know, it's come a long way over the past couple of decades. But I feel like even going back to William Regal and before that, there is like that inherent English style. It's kind of suited to Japan, to be honest. But the thing is with WWE, and I'll give an example. They had Sami Zayn and Daniel Bryan face each other at WrestleMania. But it wasn't really Daniel Bryan and Sami Zayn. Do you know what I mean? Like, they could have had a Matt Classic. They could have had, like, an absolute show stealer for 20 minutes. But instead, they booked Sami Zayn a certain way, and it detracts from how good he actually is. Like, he's got this cowardly heel stuff, and then he can't really do what Sami Zayn does. And then as a result, you don't get the match you think you're getting. So on paper, Daniel Bryan, Sami Zayn, amazing. Translates, though, differently. And I feel like that's the same with announcers sometimes, where, like, JR is I don't want to, like, bury him, because he is, like, my childhood hero in terms of announcing. He is, like, the voice of wrestling. But he's always kind of focused on, like, their background, where, like, oh, this guy played football in high school or whatever, rather than what's actually transpiring in front of him in the ring and kind of the origins of that, maybe. Do you know what I mean? I would say JR is more of like an athletic background than a technical one. So, and there's nothing wrong with that, because you can complement him with people like Excalibur, who is actually pretty well versed in what he's seeing in front of him. It's just, I think JR, He's still good. Like, he still has those calls where it's like that only JR could call it, but it's not going to be the same as he was in the Attitude Era or whatever. And even then, I don't think he was really ever pointing out, you know, he might have said where people train or whatever, but he's not going to tell you what, you know, Chris Benoit was doing in the ring or whatever. So I guess it's all about pairings, really.
Yeah, it's like Jim Ross. I know he's legendary, but like, one example I keep using when people are like, why don't you like Jim Ross right now? It's like Jungle Boy. He keeps saying his name differently every time he announces him. It's like, it's hard to get behind someone. It sometimes feels like with the Jericho matches, yeah, you can feel him into it. But like, the main guys that I see in AEW right now, like Ricky Starks, Darby Allin, Ben Carter, MJF, Will Hobbs and Brian Cage is going to be insane next week. They're like five people who I could see the strap being put around our waist in like 5 or 6 years. So unless Jim Ross is going to have to be behind them, because when that call happens and someone gets the belt put around them and Jim Ross is just sitting there and not putting any effort into it, how are you going to get people over in the mainstream as your top champion when one of your commentators doesn't care?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have said in terms of, you know, like if you ever go back and watch Double or Nothing, and I didn't hear this at the time because, and I mean the first one, I didn't hear it, his commentary at the time because I was there, I was in the stadium. But when they were saying, you know, he was kind of like almost sleepy, but as soon as like the Moxley came out and the Jericho main event, and he's lively. So maybe it is just a case of getting comfortable, or who he's personally invested in. But I mean, we could only really speculate that.
Yeah, of course. Okay, we get on to this question here that I briefed you on earlier. Louis is named his Survivor Series team of Kenny Omega, Brock Lesnar, Minoru Suzuki, Daniel Bryan, and AJ Styles. That is a team. What team are you putting up to go against them of at current wrestlers?
So hang on a minute. He gets first pick. Five picks. That's very unfair.
I mean, okay. We can clone some people.
No, it's fine. I'll take the challenge. So say it again. Lesnar, Suzuki, Bryan, Styles, and Omega.
Yep.
Okay. Reigns and Rollins, easiest two picks ever. I was just thinking of like basically trying to match up like a Japan pick, but I mean I wouldn't have picked Suzuki anyway. But you know, you got Okada, Tanahashi, Ibushi. So many.
Takagi would be my pick personally.
Yeah. I mean, or Ospreay, to be fair.
I'm loving Jay White in the G1.
Yeah, Jay White. Yeah, I love Jay White too.
Love Jay White.
God, yeah, Jay White's hard not to pick here. That's the same thing. Like when I think of AEW, for me, like, and who I personally enjoy, I love Cody Rhodes. Like I'm a big Cody guy. I felt like maybe six months ago when he was running as a babyface, he was just on fire. He was so good. The hottest baby face in the company at one point. I've got Reigns and Rollins just because I think that both of them are doing kind of the top work of their career right now in different regards. It's hard to match it. Like it's hard to match up like a Lesnar or anyone like that. I would say.
Imagine Lesnar and Takagi or Lesnar and Ishii in the ring. Jesus fucking Christ.
This is it, yeah. do you know what? It's funny as well. When I think of Kota Ibushi, like it's so hard to remember that he actually was like in NXT and he was in the Cruiserweight tournament and
he high five Vince McMahon without knowing who he is. Oh, Ibushi stories give me strength when I hear them.
And now he's jacked as anyone's ever been jacked before in their whole entire lives. It's hard. I keep thinking like, oh, I'm gonna say Okada, and then I was like, no, I'm not gonna say Okada. But like 2 or 3 years ago, I might have said Okada without even hesitation. Daniel Bryan's a real robbing pick as well.
Daniel Bryan could wrestle himself. You could pick Bryan Danielson if you want.
Yeah. God, yeah. I mean, if again, like he's taken a lot of the ones that it's certainly two or three that I would have taken. But I think if I'm gonna try and spread it around the promotions a little bit. So I am gonna have Tanahashi. He's gonna be alongside Reigns and Rollins, and I'm gonna have Cody from AEW just because I really like him. And I need a big man to counter Lesnar.
So who's the four you have so far? Rollins, Reigns, Cody.
I've got Reigns, I've got Cody, I've got Tanahashi.
Okay.
God. Truly terrible. Truly terrible decision to have to make.
Who's the big man?
Yeah, well, I don't know. It doesn't even have to be a big man, does it? Let's be honest.
You've got Reigns in there. Who?
Yeah, he's big-ish. I think he's only about 6'2", to be. But to be fair, Lesnar's only 6'3". But it's so hard. I've got so many favourite wrestlers. I don't know why.
Try and catch Cain Velasquez.
Oh, yeah, imagine Cain Velasquez. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just gonna have to. I'm just gonna pick Big E to take on Lesnar. Just because I like Big E very much. So yeah, that'd be a good team.
That is a fantastic Survivor Series lineup. I think I'm going to keep that as my regular question on this podcast because it seems to get good thoughts and emotions out of. Broad question. Sorry for Alex for this, but a dream interview. You've done a lot. Louis said his stunt double Tony Khan after saying Vince, but then quickly dispelling it, but then he said Tony Khan. Is there anybody you haven't interviewed that you'd want to interview or that you'd think you'd mesh well with?
Well, I think, Vince is the goal. Like, everyone would love Vince, but it's just not realistic, is it? So I think for me, it'd be The Rock. I think, like, he was my hero. He's what really got me into wrestling. I just feel like I'd have so much to share with him, or like beyond the generic stuff that people interview him with. I think because I know his career so well, there's a lot of kind of interesting, intricate questions I could ask him about specific points in his career. I think that would be just a great, I really do think that'd be a great interview. So I think Vince is like the long, long, long shot, and The Rock is the long shot. You know, other than that, maybe like a Cena. I haven't had Cena before, so there's a lot of stuff to ask him too. I think that's probably the top three.
Yeah, get on to Chris Van Vliet and ask him for The Rock's number.
I know, but believe we've had this conversation. Trust me.
Or just post photos of Terramana Tequila every day for the next 4 years, and you might know. But and I'm going to end it. I don't want to keep you too long, so I'm going to end with a question that I've asked a few people. We see you interviewing wrestlers and talking about and doing a great job in the wrestling world, but what are your passions or hobbies outside of wrestling? When you, obviously, I'm assuming you love a switch off from your day-to-day job. I'm assuming it sounds like a great job, but when you do it every day, I'm assuming you just, what are those switch-offs for you? Is it family or is there other interests?
So yeah, I mean, on like, I typically have kind of like maybe one full day off a week, and I always spend that with my daughters. Like, give my missus a break, want to spend time with my daughters, I'll go to play parks with them or whatever. Like that, pretty much every week I'll do something like that, whether it be the park, whatever. At night, it was the gym. I hurt my knee recently though, so that's kind of been off the table for a little while. Other than that, I'm a big gamer, so I play a lot of Call of Duty, play a lot of Warzone, FIFA. Like, this is the other thing as well, for TalkSport, I'm kind of like the gaming correspondent, so a lot of people send me games to play. So at the moment, I'm like inundated. I've got to get through 2K's new basketball game and their new golf game.
I'm a big golf fan, so I'm interested to see how the game is, because hasn't been good since Tiger Woods. I mean, I'm a big Rory McIlroy fan, but that game wasn't good.
The Tiger Woods was the last great golf game.
But, yeah,
The thing with I won't get into it too much, but it's all right. It's nothing revolutionary, but it's kind of fun to play. I think, and I just played the UFC game as well that EA brought out, which is like fun and kind of addictive to play. But then once you've kind of done your career, which is very elementary stuff, it's just a bit like, oh, well, that's done.
That's just fight as Anthony Joshua, really.
Yeah, well, this is it. Gaming is definitely there. I do love to play football. I used to get paid to play semi-professionally. Kind of from my teenage years to my late I think my last year at semi-pro was when my daughter was one. So that means I was 30, was I? 29, 30, something like that. And but then it just became too hard with like the kids and my job. You know, like you get, like if I had an interview or something, for instance, and a lot of the interviews are late because it's American time. So, you know, a lot of them are kind of like 6 to 7 or whatever. Kind of bang on when I would be training and I'd have to miss training and then you dropped and it was just like, I ain't doing this anymore. So I still play football at the weekends where possible, but my knees obviously put that to rest at the moment. So hoping to get back into that soon. So I guess the short answer of this drawn out answer that I'm giving you is gaming, working out and my children, I guess.
Yeah, that's a man of many talents, man of many talents. And I've decided, since your interview with Kyle O'Reilly was fantastic today, I really, really enjoyed it. What do you see, I'm going to finish it with, what do you see in Kyle O'Reilly's future in the next year? Because I cannot wait to see him as a single star. 5 matches since he joined NXT on his own is just doing a disservice to someone who was just amazing, selling, emotion, wrestling. Him and Balor is going to be insane. I don't. My prediction is Balor. But I really want them to strap the North American belt to him. But I was interested to see what your take is on his future in NXT.
Well, listen, I'm assuming like you know full well about what Kyle O'Reilly has done in Ring of Honor and Wrestle Kingdom 11.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And so guys like us know what he can do. Guys like us know what he brings to the table. And for me, he's never fought Finn Balor, which is I didn't actually realize that till he told me that.
Like yeah, I could have sworn they would have fought in like the best Super Juniors or something.
That's what I thought. But apparently, just as he got to Japan, Finn Balor had signed with NXT. So it's crazy how they've kind of missed each other. And you know, we saw with Finn recently when he took on Tim Thatcher, maybe You know he can do the Matt Classic stuff again. You know, him and Carl was just so technical beyond people's comprehension, I think. And a lot of his jujitsu he brings to the table, it's so entertaining. He meshes it maybe better than anyone in the game, like even better than maybe Riddle, who's like a full-on MMA artist. I think O'Reilly kind of infuses his style into pro wrestling so, so well. So I'm really excited to see what him and Finn can do. You just know it's going to be a banger. And there's a part of me that thinks that maybe that will be just a direction for him. Like, you know, like I don't think Undisputed Era will break up anytime soon, but I think they realised that maybe there's a story there with him holding the belt and then, you know, Cole being a bit like, oh, you know, I don't know. But I do think that after this match on Sunday that people are going to be far... people are going to be so hungry to see more that WWE are going to have no choice.
Yeah, every cloud has their lining because the term being thrown around is throwaway takeover, like it's been thrown together a bit. But if it wasn't thrown together, I don't think they would have put Kyle in the match with Finn. And now everybody's going to see just that it's going to be like, give them 20 minutes. For a review recently, I watched NXT TakeOver London. Finn Balor and Samoa Joe went 18 minutes in the main event and had an absolute barn burner. Do that again, just 20 minutes and fucking be amazing.
Isn't that the thing sometimes where like people equate like time to the significance of a match? I don't always think that correlates. Like I didn't need to see, I think it was 30 minutes, maybe 40 minutes. I thought FTR and Omega and Paige was way too long when they
sweating out of their
yeah, exactly. It's not their fault, but it was way too long. It's same as Edge and Orton at WrestleMania, way too long. Like they had a great match at Backlash that was kind of actually similar in length, but it was comprised totally different. And yeah. I feel like, you know, that makes a big difference on these things. And you can have a truly banging main event and it doesn't have to be north of 20 minutes or, you know, 50. It could be sort of around the 15 mark.
Yeah, one of my favorite, I don't know if you've seen this, you probably have. One of my favorite matches that I've watched this year, didn't take place this year, it took place in Noah back in the day, was Kenta versus Ricky Marvin. It was an amazing match. It clocked in bell to bell, was 1 minute and 58 seconds. And it's free on YouTube and it's insane. Bret Hart and was it Razor and 1-2-3 Kid as well, this 5 minute match. That was fantastic. It doesn't need to be 40 minutes long. But yeah, Kyle, there's no ceiling for Kyle. And I think that's where we'll end it because I know you're a very busy man. not that you need any plugging, but can you please tell us where we can find you on Twitter and all the interviews that where we can find your interviews and everything? Just plug everything away.
Absolutely. So it's AlexM_TalkSport. That's where you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram. TalkSport.com/wrestling is where you'll find all my written interviews and general WWE news. But you'll find the videos on Inside the Ropes. They are hosting my interviews at the moment, and Kyle O'Reilly will be up in the coming day. And, well, you say actually this is going to be 3 days old. So it's up already, all right? What's the other thing that I want to say? Oh, no, yeah, I've got a show. I keep forgetting. I have a radio show that's on every Monday, 7 till 9 on TalkSport 2. We have great guests, you know, with all the interviews that I get done, and live guests too. So feel free to check it out.
Yeah, and as I was doing my research, you also have a YouTube channel that has a lot of the interviews up there with like Otis and Matt Riddle and everybody.
The thing with that is, I am still putting stuff up there, but generally speaking at the moment, I've partnered with Inside the Ropes just because of their reach and stuff. So feel free to subscribe to my YouTube channel, but also definitely catch my stuff on Inside the Ropes.
Yep, Inside the Ropes is fantastic. So many good interviews. That was amazing. I'm just going to say, follow us on Hallway Reps Pod. tpublic.com/iWrestlingPodcast. We actually have merch. You can get a baby grow with my face on it. It's scary. But, there's a site-wide sale going on. We've a load of t-shirts up there. Logos, OG logos. The Man of Genetics Forgot t-shirts. We're a very on brand, but go check that out. And this has been an amazing interview. This today has been very good. Louis and Alex coming on has been an honor to be talk to them both. So thanks very much, Alex. As we say at the end of every episode of the Hallway Wrestling Podcast, Kyle O'Reilly for NXT champion.